everyone. And as this goes out, happy Friday. I'm Alex, head of revenue for South Africa at Capitalize. And as always, I'm joined by my trusty colleague, Kirsty McGregor, our accountant in residence and founder of the Corporate Finance Network. Today, we have a special guest. And as we were just colluding off of camera, someone that I crossed paths with many moons ago, I think were his words, Dan Richards of my firm, Zap. Dan, good morning. How are we today?
Morning, Alex. Yeah, great to be here. Yes, many, many moons ago. But yeah, doing very well, thank you. Great to be with you.
Nice. Well, thank you for joining us. Kirsty, I know, has, and I'm going to steal a bit of her thunder here, you know, was keen to see you talk at AccountX North and didn't manage to make it. So that essentially has led us to what's here today. And you know, really excited to unpick the topic of your presentation and panel session. And, you know, learn a bit more. For me, always, I always learn a lot about the UK market when Kirsty brings on the UK specialists. And that's great because I get to rip it off and steal it and bring it into South Africa as well. So Kirsty does my homework for me, which is always helpful. Kirsty, over to you.
Thank you, Alex. Yeah, I was just saying to Dan off camera that, yeah, I did miss him at AccountX North. I think I saw him in the area, but I never actually got to his webinar, his lecture, sorry. And panel session, and how like perks of the job is because we have the podcast, I'm just like, right, you can come and do a one-to-one for us on the podcast. So we're being a bit cheeky saying, come on and recreate this, but why not? Let's get it out to a wider audience, because I reckon it was probably a really great session. But first, before we talk about that, for those of you that don't know you or don't know my firm's app, tell us a little bit about what your product does and how accountants use it. Give us an example of who's your most amazing firm that's just totally got what you do.
Yeah, indeed, we love those people. So yeah, thank you. So I've been working in the profession since the late 90s, and so a little while now, Alex, and we have done various things over the years, but in 2012 we set up my firm's app, and the idea at the time was to put the accounting firm at the heart of the digital relationship with their clients, so that their client could have one app and that everything that they needed to do with the firm could be contained within it. So the links through to all the other online services they do, which of course has exploded over the last 10 years, the tools that they need, like data capture for receipts, for automatic GPS mile tracking, document scanning, all the content that the client might need from the firm, but also stuff that comes from elsewhere, all the calculators and tax tables and things they might need, and the ability for the firm to communicate through the app as well, so that it takes the pressure and the burden away of some of those operational practices and how people are using email. And of course, that has been of recent years something of a particular importance. So the ability to chat inside the app now is really very popular, because people just like me don't reply to our accountants via email, and we're all very naughty, but it happens.
And so people are increasingly bad on email, right?
It's not it's become what it was never intended to be, hasn't it? And it's at least I hope that's the case, because my email behavior is dreadful, but I don't think I'm alone. And so having the ability to communicate directly with the client, but away from silos, because clients are doing loads of things like sending text messages, WhatsApps, Facebook Messenger, whatever the client chooses to do. And suddenly the firm has now gone, oh my goodness, I've got stuff everywhere, and there's no auditable trail, and it's just a mess. And so digital became a bit of a problem for that. So things like the chat facility and using push notifications through the app are really great, because it's all in one place, all auditable, and the client gets that benefit, but so does the firm. So that's been a sort of a journey over the last 10 years with that. And we have very large and very small firms using it. It's really those of their aptitude that say, yeah, I want to be at the heart of that digital relationship. I want to communicate better. I want to help my team, be they small or large, to have a more efficient relationship with the client. But one standout customer, I guess, would be someone I was talking to last night in America. And her name is Jennifer Brazier. She runs a firm called Complete Controller. Amazing story. She's well worth looking up. She's written a book called From Cubicle to Cloud. And she started off as a single mom at home. And it's now, I think, the biggest bookkeeping company, client advisory services company in America. Wow. And so it's a real terrific story. And we've been working together for a number of years. You know, consider her to be a good friend now. And they've used the app in great ways, both with the onboarding of new clients and in their ongoing operations of the existing clients they've got, especially with a team that's national across America. So all 50 states, and they've got a team based remotely everywhere, so it's able to be very useful in that environment.
It's funny. Knocking something over here, but I was going to say, Dan, it's funny that pre the pandemic, it felt like there was this big drive on, like, how do we improve the channels with which we communicate through? And it was suddenly WhatsApp was acceptable. It went beyond email. People started having, like, shared Slack groups with clients, etc. And as we went into the pandemic and everyone went into lockdown and the amount of working hours went from, like, a confined day into essentially around the clock, everybody then was driving to find a more controlled way of communicating, and almost like recessing again and being like, okay, how do we close these doors? So, I mean, have you seen that change in behavior through the app communication as well, that people are now refocusing on that channel?
Very much so. So I think what you've described there is spot on. And one of the great advantages that's come out of the last couple of years, I know there's been some real hardships as well, but if we look at some of the advantages that have come out of it, is that everyone and their gran ended up being on Zoom and other such things. And so actually that digital capability rose massively, way faster than it otherwise ever would have done. And also the permission levels that go along with that. So there's no longer an accountant for a accountancy firm that might need to say, well, I don't know if I can talk to my clients that way, or I don't think I can use these tools with my client. You know, that conversation disappeared in a puff of smoke. And so now that permission exists to talk to the clients digitally, to get them to use tools because of what the last 2 or 3 years have done for us. But there's a lot of cleaning of house that needs to be done now. And that's where something like the app really comes into town, because it enables to say, look, it's the firm's own app and the firm's own branding. It's one communication channel. It's more secure than email. It's more responsive than email. It's got a full auditable trail. So it goes to the behavior that the world has adopted, but not in the messy way that happened. And not that the messy way was anyone's fault. It's just a natural outcome of things changing so fast.
So that leads perfectly, I suppose, into the next question, which was, when you say there needs to be a bit of a cleanup job done and firms need to change the way that they're working, that immediately makes me think, oh, how are the firms going to manage this? Because this is a big task to do. And I know they've got so many big tasks to do at the moment to get to this best practice position they want to be in. And I know that, therefore, the topic that you were talking about at Accountex was one that's quite close to my heart, because we here at Capitalise and through the Corporate Finance Network, we are asking firms to incorporate something different or new into their practices. And the FTI, the failure to implement, you can see it across some firms, not all of them, some are absolutely amazing. It's the digital cloud firms that have sprung up in the last 10 years have in a way had it a lot easier, because they could always start with the, you know, if Carling made accountancy firms, what would it look like approach. But those that are the, is Carling, isn't it? I'm terrible with
brands. Probably the best
Carlsberg. Carlsberg.
Carlsberg. Yeah, thank you.
See, I was wrong.
Sorry. All sorts of trading standards going on there.
Like the BBC, we don't have time. But then the issue then becomes for the older firms or the more traditional firms, that they've got all this legacy. That's always harder. It's like moving an oil tanker around or QE2 around. So when you were speaking at Accountex, you had a great panel. You know, you had some brilliant names from the accountancy world. You had Will Farnell, you had Samantha Mitchum, and you had Lydia Reed Potter. So I want you to try and recreate that session just on your own now. In 5 minutes rather than 30 or whatever it was. What were the key takeaways from that session? You know, was there anything that was in there that surprised you?
So first of all, hands up, there's no way I can replace those three or in 5 minutes, but we'll give something a go. Yes, Carlsberg could have created accounting firms and done it digitally from the start. But actually, there is a commonality that came out of that conversation. So the session was titled Failure to Implement an Honest Conversation. And that conversation has to come from really two sides of the coin. One is firm side and the other is supplier side, because we're all in the same game. And if we start from the premise that we're all trying to get something good happening and trying to help each other out, then that's a helpful place to begin. So then we can talk about it honestly. And if you're a digital firm building from the start, like Samantha was, a small firm, growing, doing really well, but had the opportunity to build the way she wanted from the beginning, as opposed to Will, who went, I had a firm like this and then I changed it. So you got two good examples there. Now, with Sam, she hit many of the same challenges that Will did. So actually, the fact that you're guessing was really interesting to me. So all three of them shared a lot of the same experiences. So Lydia's got a slightly bigger business. So they kind of got, you know, small and growing well. Sam, Lydia being going a bit further, and then Will took something and changed it and did very well. But the common experiences are still there. And some of those experiences are, they begin with the often used, and so it might get ignored, statement of why are you doing things? And, you know, the Simon Sinek stuff. So when something is spoken about as frequently as that is, we can become a little bit deaf to it.
The cliche,
yeah, exactly. The cliche is, oh, I've heard that before. It's kind of, but actually, it still matters. And the reason it matters is if we understand why we're doing what we're doing as a small, medium, or larger firm. Because Will, I think, has got 70 staff now. He's growing very fast and doing well. He's on an acquisition trail. So you've got small, medium, larger. If we understand why we're doing what we're doing, then we make different choices. And therefore, the choices we make over the services that we require to help us, the products that we need, the technology that we acquire for our businesses, they get affected by that decision. Whereas in our enthusiasm, we just do stuff. And that would probably be the comparison there. So in our enthusiasm and just doing stuff, we listen to all the fancy sales pitches and go, that's great, I need that. And we buy stuff, and then it doesn't really implement very well, and it doesn't fit within what we're trying to do, and the clients don't want to use it, or the team members don't understand why it's in place. And so we get that failure to implement, and that's costly in time, costly in focus, and it's costly in cash, because of course you're normally paying for something along the way as well. So I think, yes, you've got the digital firms that have got the opportunity to grow the way they want from the very beginning, those newer firms. But some of those same challenges still exist between those legacy ones as well. Perhaps another one would be the relationship that you can have with your supplier was a common theme across all three of those panelists as well. So if we assume that the supplier actually really wants to help you, I know there's one or two exceptions in all of life, but if we assume that's the case, then work better together. You know, use the customer success teams that these businesses have got, because that's what they're there for. They get out of bed to try and help their clients, their customers, do better with their clients.
And they've probably seen it before. Yeah, we've seen it over and over again with other firms. Yeah, so we can share experiences. Yeah.
And so the more that you can collaborate on those things, the better it gets. And sometimes there's the point that you made, Kirsty, which is, well, we're all so busy, I don't have time for that. But that can be a fool's errand. And so actually putting a little bit of time in now in this way creates a lot more efficiency and a lot less heartache further down the road. So those things were common themes. Another one would be the shared education and nurturing with the team that's in place.
I was going to say delegation and empowering your team must come into that, sure.
Yeah, it's a great way of putting it. Fewer words than I use, well done. So
Put me on the panel next time, Dan.
You're there, Kirsty. You're away. I'll retire and let you take over. Really where that comes to is a lot of the time, and this is a real challenge as a small firm because you don't have much of a team, if a team at all. And so everything does stick with that one person. But the challenge is as you do start to get a smaller team and that grows, to not let it keep sticking with that one or two people in the firm, but to divest as much as you can across the team. But there's a really interesting dynamic at play at the moment that these three picked up on, and the audience has a couple hundred people in the theatre for that one, that they seem to resonate with as well, which is most of the people inside an accounting firm these days are under the age of 40.
Yeah. Alex.
And so
you should say, and Kirsty, Dan, and Kirsty. No. Well past.
Sorry, everyone who's listening. That was Alex making us feel a bit older earlier. But so most of the people under the accountancy firm are under the age of 40. Mm-hmm. That means, and I'm speaking very generally here, so forgive me, but it means that they're Generation Z and millennials. And generally speaking, that means that people want to be involved and included as a generational type. Now, that wasn't necessarily the case 15, 20 years ago. In fact, almost certainly wasn't. And so what that means is those who are leading firms or managing aspects of a firm, play into that. Use your team more. Where there's a permission that exists now to use technology and digital things better amongst the client base, great. There's also a permission that exists amongst the team that says we want to be involved and included, but we often miss that. So the blockers remain ourselves. And both Lydia and Sam really resonated with that. And Will said that was still a thing amongst a firm.
Do you know, one of the things that sticks with me and has stuck with me for so long, and it was actually Colin Timmis, who's the country manager of Xero, said way back when he was still at Real Time, so we're talking long time ago now, and he was talking about trainees, and he was talking to exactly the same point that you're talking about there, Dan, around if they have the capability, if they have the level of interest, give them the responsibility, give them the space to do it, allow them to fail and potentially, ideally, fail fast. But if they're showing that interest, if they're showing that capability beyond what their title is because they're 1 year out or 2 years out, then actually they're no longer operating as a trainee. And I think it's a really, really, it's an interesting approach that is starting to become more pervasive in accounting firms. But it's been a byproduct, I personally think, a byproduct of software vendors and other companies coming in and enforcing that change. I mean, when I left university, I had a law degree. I was going to go join a law firm. I was going to go on that trail. And I left university without having sorted myself out and ended up working in a, you know, actually at Receipt Bank of all places. And after a year, I'd been given so much responsibility, so much opportunity, and so much freedom and space by those around me to learn, develop, and grow. I never looked back. 7 years later, I was still at Receipt Bank, and I'd, you know, been on this phenomenal journey. And I think that is a really difficult thing to do in a still, not every firm, as you say, operates in this model, but still quite an old school industry where there is this, you're a trainee, then you're like a, you know, an associate, and then you become, you know, a partner, and except, you know, there is a linear pathway still in lots of firms. So to give that freedom, hold that space, so to speak, is immensely difficult.
It's got to the point now, though, where I think I'm hearing from firms that their teams are wanting this exposure to software or whatever it may be, other services, and if they're not giving it them, then they are going to walk, and we know how difficult the market is for recruitment and retention at the moment, and this is what's happening. They're asking for it, they're not getting it, they will leave. And surely, you know, we need to capture that interest and move quickly so that they don't move quickly, you know. But definitely it's that's a really good theme. I'm glad that came out.
Yeah, I think it's a point well made there, and maybe just to cap it would be don't delay. I think that you both made that point there. So, you know, a plea to the profession would be don't delay. You know, this is the reality today. You don't have to wait another 5 or 10 years to begin to act upon it. You know, don't just move on with it now, and do it in small ways. It doesn't have to be that you worryingly give away control of certain things. It could simply be focus on education and nurturing. So if we break it down, you've got the profession, which are firms, you've got the industry, which is everything that's there to help firms. And so the industry, if it wants to help firms, and it does, then all the education and nurturing, the webinars, the white papers, the app content, the podcasts, you know, all these sorts of things that are being created, well, divest that across the team. Let them go on that education and nurturing journey, because one of the big things that came out from the guys at the panel as well regards failure to implement was, even when the firm owner or the manager, whomever, has been on that education and nurturing journey and made a decision for all the best reasons to engage a service, product, technology, whatever, the team haven't been on that journey. So they just go, here you go, guys, do it. And suddenly there's this big gulf. And that creates a mess in the firm and a mess from the supplier, whoever they are trying to help out. So let them be on that journey.
And that failure to implement thing, right? We've all, as software providers on this call, right, we've all been in that environment where we've gone into train a firm. And exactly what you're saying, the managing director, the founder, the partner, whoever it is, has been on that purchasing journey. And now you're in front of a room of 3, 15, 50 members of their staff. And there's a massive difference between the person that made the buying decision standing up and opening that session around, to your point around Simon Sinek, this is why we're doing it, this is what the opportunity is, this is why it's important, et cetera, and setting the theme of the day, and them going, cool, well, Dan's here from my firm's app, good luck. right? And then you're there trying to sell the story.
Yes.
And I think by virtue of being salespeople, we're good orators, right? But actually, this, you know, person in a funny colored t-shirt coming in and telling me something about my firm and why this is important is far less persuasive than the person that I've aspired and looked up to or I'm terrified of who's telling me what to do. And it's a funny one. It's the same thing you talk about Gen Z staff, same thing we've always said about rolling out software. For some reason, accounting firms and, you know, other implementation industries as well pick the hardest, most difficult, least tech savvy clients to start with. And then that's why there's a lot of failure to implement, because it doesn't work. Rather pick the younger or the more tech savvy or the more easygoing clients, those low hanging fruit, because you get that early momentum as well. It's a really interesting psyche when you unbox it.
I think what you touched on there, Alex, is something that the Kirsty, Sam and Will pulled out in the panel as well, and the audience actually, because it was thankfully a very engaged audience and some poor soul was running around with a microphone getting everyone to give their comments. But within the failure to implement, there's several ingredients, but I think the two that you highlighted just then that are really important just now are team and clients. And so for your team, I won't repeat what you've just said, but what you've just said really matters. So them being on that journey, education and nurturing, yes, having the right framing from whomever is leading the firm is really important, so that they understand why it's important to their daily task. Otherwise, they'll just do what they've always done and they'll resist. For the clients, then one of the things that firms do, and it's understandable, but it's not good, which is they ask their clients. Now, I'm a client of an accounting firm. I've been a client of several accounting firms over the years.
Yeah.
Now, when you ask me something, I'll go, that's a nice idea, and do nothing about it. Or I'll go, don't know, shrug it and move on. And the accounting firm benefits nothing from that. Yeah. Whereas if they're telling you, Dan, this is what I want you to do and why, I will normally do what I'm told. So that permission is also there to tell the client what to do. So when it comes to failure to implement, whatever it is, a new service, piece of software, an app, it doesn't matter. Whatever the thing is, if you've decided it's the right thing for your clients to be doing, tell your clients what to do. Don't ask them. Don't suggest. Don't just leave it on the email footer and go, why has no one adopted it? Get on and talk to them about it and say, I want you to do this like this from now, and this is why. And the clients mostly will go, yeah, absolutely, I'm going for that.
Something we started to say during the pandemic, actually, because we felt that we really needed to say it, was that accountants didn't realize the power they had. So we just say to them all the time, know your power. You need to just realize how influential you are. And they don't. They most of them just, you know, certainly lower than the managing partner or partners in the practice. They don't have the confidence, which is such a shame because they are so influential. So that leads me on to my last question, and Alex has got one he's going to throw in for you as well. But my last question is, with capacity at an all-time low for most firms, as we've already talked about with recruitment challenges, what changes do you think firms will make going into next year? What's on the forefront of their mind?
That's a really hard question.
That's different to should, mate.
Yeah, that's the problem. Because what do I think? I say this with the greatest respect. I know it might make me sound like an idiot for a short time, but I'm not sure firms are going to change a great deal. And the reason for that is twofold. One is legacy, and it is a problem that the profession needs to address. All industries have the challenges. This is one that is subject to the profession, which is, we tend not to change unless legislation forces us to. So that's, generally speaking, a reality of the accounting profession. Not a criticism in a nasty way, it's just a reality. The other one is, firms are blinking busy doing the day-to-day. Yeah. And so that capacity point you make is really hard. So what changes do I think they're going to make walking into 2023? Not enough. But for those two reasons, one being a legacy challenge and the other one being the reality of their very busy day-to-day. What do I think they could do more than they believe they can? And so if the firm understands what's important to them, now in the UK, that might be things like MTD for ITSA. You know, MTD's been around since 2015 now. Firms really ought to get a grip on it. Many don't. It's still the most popular sessions at any conference, which is crazy.
I know. What are we going to do at these events when MTG is not an issue anymore?
They'll get you on stage. Will be empty. Yeah, that'll be your time to shine. You'll be fine. That's a thing. And so how do we sort our capacity, our internal processes, our data collection from clients, the ease of communication, doing things five times rather than once, and all that sort of stuff that exists around it? That's going to bite because not enough people are prepared for it. The way that we communicate and the way that we retain our staff, I think those are so. Dealing with the legislative impact in the UK is a big thing. Broadening it out beyond just the UK, then we've got how we communicate with our clients and how we bring our team on are probably the two big things I would think walking into 2023.
It's also just so noisy, I think. I love when you say that they could do more than they think. But I also think, you know, I've been going similar, you know, to these accounting conferences for so long, and they're so great because it's a fantastic opportunity to speak to your peers and to listen and to learn. But I often see firms walking around with a notepad with like 17 bullet points on there of going to do this, going to do that. And it's the excitement you spoke about at the beginning. It's one of the reasons why there's so much buyer's remorse often post conferences, because it's like, well, this was great at the time, but now I've done three of them. How am I going to get them all implemented? And I always think that we always challenge ourselves by having five things that we're trying to do this month rather than going meticulously. And it's funny because it's an inverse characteristic of what normally is quite a pragmatic bunch of list checkers. Yes. And we do this, then we do this, then we do that. But it's like, pick one thing, accomplish it. Okay, that's two steps forward. Now pick, you know, and that I think is what helps them to get to a point where they can do what you said, which is achieve more than just following the legislative framework and the small changes that are mandated rather than the optional ones that are preferential for their firm.
I think just a thought on that is that noise is real. So Accountex, amazing, and they're global now. So if you're in a country within Accountex, go to it. Really great thing to do. And there's other conferences, you know, the Accounting Web Live one here in the UK. I know you've got stuff down in South Africa as well. And these things are terrific environments. But if you look at the year as a whole, then where do we find the information that we need? It was one of the questions that came from the audience in Manchester. So they said that they use that exact language, Alex, that it's too noisy. Where do I turn, was his question. Now, that can be hard. So you can talk to others. So the likes of Lydia, Sam, Will, great people to talk to. There's plenty of people who are prepared to have those conversations. And in fact, one of the amazing things about the profession, I think, over the last probably 10, 12 years now, has been it's so much more collaborative than it ever used to be. So rather than being competitive, 100%. It's collaborative. And that is outstanding. So there's a lot to learn from one another. One of the things that we've done to try and help with that a little is something called Practice Win. So anyone who's listened to this is welcome to go onto the App Store, Apple or Android, download it. It's called Practice Win, all one word, and it's free. It's free for everyone in every accounting firm everywhere to use. And it covers each of the areas of running a firm. And there are genuine channel experts across the world for each of the different aspects. So recruitment, retention, payroll, accounting software, advisory, you know, whatever it may be, all the different areas of running an accounting firm, there's the neck end of 20 channels that will be in there. And if you can use that as a reference point through the year and you can give it to your team, it might help, Alex, cut through the noise a little bit there. Because you can also say, well, what's most in the app, you can filter it and set preferences, all this stuff that you'd hope for, so that you can say, well, here's the things that are most important to me at the moment. And you can just focus in on that best practice information and then make the choices that are right for your firm.
And I think something that we often forget is you get these people up on stage like Will Farnell, who's been doing this for a damn long time. And he is, you know, if you distill it into beginner, intermediate, advanced, expert, he's an expert. Now, if I've started my firm in the last 18 months, I'm at the beginner stage, not in terms of my capability, but in terms of my business maturity. And actually, sometimes he's talking about something that's advanced. Great, that's really cool. That's something for me to aspire to. But actually right now, I'm busy thinking about the processes, or I'm busy thinking about the people, or even more basic, I'm busy thinking about what my why is or what my business values are. And you've almost got to go through that gated journey of, okay, how do we establish each of these fundamentals in order to... It's tricky. It's very tough. But we've talked about some of the challenges. We've talked about some of the things that people may, could, should do. going into 2023, Dan, but we always have a question that we ask at the end of each interview, which is what excites you about the future?
Sailing. But you're probably not asking about that.
Well, I think it's, to be fair, it's not a specific question. You can take it wherever you want. In England, on the day of recording this, have just absolutely walloped the Indians in the cricket. And that excites me about the World Cup final, which will have happened by the time this podcast goes out. But
yeah, well, I can tell you that England's performance in the Autumn Nations Six rugby so far has not gone very well. But
it doesn't excite me either.
I think... What excites me about the future just now, I'm a hopeless optimist sometimes, and I think the opportunity for the future is significant. We get a deluge of really bad news, and there is some genuine horror stuff going on. Right, there's wars, there's traumas around the place. There's economic hardships, there's political instabilities, all those things, they are real. But when we boil it back down to the control what we can control point, I think there's still a lot of opportunity, when we're not in the midst of a war situation, which most of us aren't. So where are we at with our families and the opportunities there? Where are we at with our businesses and the opportunities there? Mm. The opportunities to look after each other and do well are really strong. And if we can just settle a little bit into the stuff is going to happen mentality rather than the reactive nature to when things do happen, and therefore make some slightly better choices potentially about our families and about our work situations and so on, then that excites me, because I think there is a shift towards that. And I think there's a humanity in that matters. And gets us away from the polarizing debates that otherwise pervade all the way through the media.
I love it. I think that's a very nice chord, actually. I love the word humanity. I think it's a very powerful prism for us to look through at the moment. So, Dan, for those people that do want to take control, you spoke about that in various ways throughout today's podcast. Take control of client communication, take control of how they disseminate information to their clients, or even take control of some of the challenging areas in their business through the Practice Wins app that you spoke about. Where can people go to find out more about you and about My Firm's app?
They're very welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn. So Daniel Richards on LinkedIn, and the My Firm's app is simply myfirmsapp.com. And Practice Win has its own website, practicewin.com. Or as I say, simply go onto the App Store, Apple or Android, download the app for free, play around with it. There is a little feedback section in. Oh, Kirsty's got it on the screen. Well, there is a little feedback section in there. So please do use it. Send us comments back, because we want this to be genuinely useful to the profession and to help with the sorts of stuff we've been talking about today.
I've got a quick question. Why do you have to be over 18 to use it? I'm a bit worried about what's coming next.
Indeed. It's Apple. I don't know why they asked if you've got to be over.
Not going outside the content. I'm looking forward to using it.
Yeah, the content isn't that racy or exciting. It's ultimately it's about running an accounting firm, right?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get less racy or exciting content than that. Certainly not going to be gated. Anyway, fantastic. So that wraps up today's episode. And for those of you new to Capitalize, our vision is to give small businesses and their advisors transparency and control over business finance. We want every small business to identify risks they might face, explore how they stand from a credit perspective, and choose the right funding that fits their business. For those of you who haven't already subscribed to the podcast, I know you're barking mad. Please do. You can get us on Spotify, Amazon, or wherever else you get your podcasts from. You can also go back and listen to our backlog catalog, with some other brilliant interviews from the likes of Dan and many, many others. For more about Capitalize and the Future Positive podcast, please do go check us out at capitalize.com. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Kirsty, once again, for joining. And a massive special thank you to Dan. And great to reconnect, Dan. Thank you for sharing some fantastic insights from Accountex North and being so generous with your time today.
It was just like being there in person. Perfect job, Dan. Well done.
Just without the three amigos. But no, thank you very much. It's been great fun. Really appreciate it.